Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. I got something special for you guys today. One thing that we are going to be doing the rest of the season is on Friday mornings, I'm going to connect with my buddy Reeves from Barstool Sports, who is just as big of a degenerate as I am, to talk you through some of the biggest games of the weekend from a betting perspective. As always, the lines for these games are not going to come out for another 6 to 8 hours, but we want to get this up for you for your day on Friday. And since the lines always end up opening right around what some of the metrics project them to be, we can just talk through the games and talk through the lines and give you our thoughts on how these games are going to play out and what the game script is going to end up looking like and the matchups. And at the end of the day, that is the most important thing when it comes to betting college basketball. So Riggs, how you doing, sir?
Good, man. Ready for after kind of a weird slate, I think the Saturday slate's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about some of these picks and some of these games. So the games that we are going to dive into will be Duke, Virginia, obviously, Marquette, Villanova, Wisconsin at Michigan, Kentucky at Mississippi State, and Louisville at Florida State. We are obviously going to start with Duke at Virginia because that is the biggest game of the weekend. One thing to note, we don't have any clarity on Ty Jerome's health. He did not play, I believe it was on Sunday when Virginia hosted Miami. It was Kihei Clark that started at the point. Obviously, if Ty Jerome is not there, that is a big loss for him. And, you know, Virginia's been pretty quiet about this. I don't have any inside information, but I am just expecting that Ty Jerome is going to be healthy and ready to play for this game. The lines right now, KenPom is projecting Virginia to win by 5. Torvik is projecting Virginia to win by 6. And Haslametrics is projecting Virginia to win by 3. And all three of those projections have roughly like a mid-130s total. So, Reeves, let's just start with this. Ty Jerome is probably going to be back, but Cherry Jones is going to be back as well. How does that affect anything that you're looking at with this game?
I mean, it's the biggest thing is whether or not he plays. But I do have a look ahead line, I believe, from my guy, Matt Lindemann, who's over at Caesars. And they opened up with Virginia minus 1.5.
Wow. Yes.
And okay, this was back on the 6th. So what was that, 2 days ago?
Yes.
So that's the one line that he put out for just Saturday. He did a marquee kind of look ahead for the rest of the season with, I want to say, 10 games. So Duke, Virginia opened at Caesars at minus 1.5 on Wednesday.
Okay, so I love that line. And I guess we could dive in.
If Ty Jerome plays.
Yes, if Ty Jerome plays, I love that line. But I'm kind of assuming that he is going to. I think we would have heard a little bit more about it if he was not going to play.
I assume too. My biggest thing is just how close to 100% is he? Because he's going to, I mean, Trey Jones is the one that's going to guard him, right?
Yeah, but what's going to end up happening is, so I went back and I watched a lot of what Duke did defensively in their last three games, and they're still basically doing the same thing they did against Virginia that first time, even though Trey Jones is back. They are more or less, against Notre Dame, they switched every single exchange, and they switched every single ball screen, even with Trey Jones there. And to hide Trey Jones against, you know, John Mooney, they did a lot of triple switching, which basically just means they switch the ball screen and then whoever's helping, like one of their other big guys, switches with Trey Jones so he can get back out to guard another perimeter player. So they basically did that. Against St. John's, they did some switching, but when it came to ball screens against Shamori Ponds, they mostly either trapped it to get the ball out of his hands or they just let Bolden hedge and recover so that Trey Jones or Bolden didn't get stuck on an island against Shamori Ponds, because that would not have gone well for Marquise Bolden. And against Boston College, they mostly switched ball screens against Kai Bowman, although it was a little weird because Boston College runs a lot of drag ball screens, and that's a little bit more difficult for them to switch. But I'm fully expecting, even with Trey Jones there, Duke to switch everything, which means that I think Virginia is going to go to this. The one weird thing about them, and not to get like too into the X's and O's weeds, but they for like years have run the blocker mover offense that Tony Bennett's dad invented up at Wisconsin, which is essentially like you have three guards and two bigs, and one guard has the ball, and the other two bigs are just setting screens for the other two guards to kind of run off of. And what they're doing a lot more now, since they don't really play with just two bigs, they play with basically four perimeter players, is a lot of continuity ball screen. And that's basically America's offense. Everybody in the country runs it. And all it is just a way to kind of get players moving. So you'll get a side ball screen on the empty side of the floor with three shooters on one side. And then you run that ball screen. And then if it doesn't work, then you have players move. So on the other side of the floor, then you get that ball screen again on the empty side with three shooters on the opposite side of the floor. I got a video breakdown of it up on NBCSports.com. And what I think is going to happen is, once again, we're going to see a situation where Virginia just runs that until they get the matchup that they want, which is either Ty Jerome being guarded by Bolden, or DeAndre Hunter being guarded by Bolden, or Kyle Guy being guarded by Bolden. Lift the defense and let those isolations kind of work.
Or Hunter guarded by Jones and try to put him in the mid post.
Yes, yes, that absolutely as well.
Because I think that's going to be a matchup to watch. If I agree with you that I think Duke does continue to run the same defense that we've seen him run. And if they can get that switch on a side ball screen where it ends up kind of turning into a mid ISO for Hunter and, like, you know, mid to high post. I'll make the case Jones is the best guard defender in the country, but now you throw him against another NBA guy that has that height on him. Yeah, he might get a couple steals, but Hunter's probably going to win that matchup. It just comes down to Jerome height or Jerome's health from a betting standpoint. Like, if he's healthy, Virginia wins at home because Virginia wins at home. If he's not healthy, Duke's the play. I'm curious to see what this line opens as. If 1.5, yeah, I think it's going to drop, right? You assume maybe some money comes in on Duke with the early money? I don't know. I'm curious to see what it opens at.
At Virginia minus 1.5, then
I'll take Virginia
minus 1.5. It's tough. Look, I want to say that I would hammer it, but I don't want to invest any money in that line until I know for sure what Ty Jerome's status is going to be. Like, if we get an update today, if Tony Bennett talks to reporters today and we get some news on it, then I think that, like, as soon as it opens, you just jump on it, like we did last time when it was at Duke and Virginia opened at 3.5. You just got to jump on it right away.
Right.
But if we don't know, then I think that you got to wait. And here's the other thing about it. Like, I really, really like, let's say that Jerome is healthy, right? And that it's Virginia minus 1.5, and we get it at 1.5 or whatever, and the line just moves up, and it ends up closing at like 5.5 or so, which I don't think is something that is totally out of the question, especially if we get some like solid news on what Jerome's health is going to be. At that point, once we get to the higher end of the range, I think that I like the Duke money line. Because
yeah, I'm not taking Virginia minus anything more than 2, maybe 2.5.
Because I think it's going to play out the same way that it did the last game. The yep. One thing that makes me a little hesitant to do that, and the only, like, I would take the Duke money line just because I would like the return you're getting on that value.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I think that what is going to happen with Duke on the offensive end of the floor is I just can't see them, you know, I don't see RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson combining for 57 points again and shooting 60% from the floor. Because Virginia is better than anybody in the country at cutting off penetration. And the way that those two win is by beating their defenders and getting into the lane. Like, Duke is one of the worst jump shooting teams in all of college basketball. And that is what Virginia is going to make you do to beat them. And I just think at home, Virginia is going to be able to slow them down a little bit better than they did at Cameron.
Yeah, the one thing that also scares me about, you know, if the line gets up to take Virginia is, I'll give Duke credit for this, and it's not really expert analysis or anything like that. They get up for these big games. Like, they kicked Kentucky. They beat Auburn pretty easily. Obviously, the Gonzaga game was a loss. St. John's was a game that people were hyping up, and they just blew them out. Texas Tech, they ended up winning by 11. Indiana, they blew out. So, Virginia, they won. So, even though they're young, and I know a lot of people kind of look at that, is how do they handle, you know, these big games? Well, this is their, what, fourth top 10 team that they're playing? They're fine. Like, I'm not worried about I to me, this is like the prototypical Duke has this one circle. This is the one where they want to come out and like prove a point. So that's why Virginia minus 2.5 is the max I'm taking them.
Yeah, I don't know if I think I might go a little higher than that. I think I might take them at 3.5. But I don't want the biggest thing is I don't want a lot of points to cover because I don't think that, however, I think Virginia wins.
I agree.
But I don't want to have a lot of points to cover, because I don't, either way, it's not going to, like, we're talking about two of the four best defensive teams in the country. Right. We're talking about a Virginia team that is going to make sure that this game gets played at, what, like 65 possessions. And Virginia, as good as they are, they're still going to have to stop two of the best players in college basketball, two of the most unstoppable players in college basketball. And then Duke is going to have their own problems trying to stop Virginia. I don't see this being
the over.
The over of, if it ends up like in the 130s.
If it ends up like 135, 136.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that a little bit more.
Just because there are so many mismatches that I think it's not, you know, I don't think it's going to be a ton of possessions, but I think both teams are going to be super efficient.
If I bet it, I would probably bet the over, but I want to see what the total opens up at first. Right. If we're talking like low 130s, then yes. But if we're talking about like 136, 137, I'll probably just end up staying away personally.
Sure, sure.
All right, let's move on. Villanova at Marquette, where these lines are opened up now. KenPom has it at Marquette minus -2. Torvik has it at Marquette minus -3. And Haslam actually has Villanova favored by 1. All of these totals are right around like 140, 141 kind of a deal. So what do you like there?
This feels like Marquette, right? Like this is the one. They're at home. Villanova undefeated in Big East play. You know, Villanova has done a good job of kind of adjusting. Like Creighton slowed them down. They were able to win that game. They've played faster. They've been able to win that game. If they get into a three-point shooting contest, Marquette's the one team in the conference that can either do it as good or better than them. And the fact that it's at home, if it's, again, you're talking 2 points, this is Marcus Howard breakout game or one of the Hauser brothers just lighting it up, written all over it.
Yeah, I don't think that Villanova has the guy that can slow down Marcus Howard. Like, what you need to stop Marcus, there's a reason why in the last 18, go ahead.
Gillespie on him, probably.
I think it'll be Phil Booth, and they'll let Gillespie deal with Sakar and him. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, Villanova switches enough where I think we're going to see Marcus Howard get guarded by plenty of different people in certain situations. And they just don't, like, the way that you stop him is with length and athleticism. And, like, it's a tangent here, but the fact that it was Justin Simon and St. John's have been the only two teams to slow him down in the last, like, what, 3 months?
Yeah.
That's a little worrying to me for Marcus Howard's NBA future, because he's going to see a lot more of guys like Justin Simon than he is going to be seeing guys like whoever else he's faced in college. Like, look, he lit up Barry Brown. He lit up C.J. Massenburg at Buffalo, who's a really good defender. He
lit up Xavier, who I know is not a great defensive team, but they have those bigger, longer guards.
Yes, so he can he does not struggle with people. Like, Phil Booth is not going to be a guy that necessarily gives him issues. If he gets into a rhythm, he's going to be able to make shots against Phil Booth. And I think that Villanova is going to focus their attention on him. And the thing about the Hauser brothers is, especially Sam, he has proven that he is more than capable of stepping up in a big game. And I'll tell you what, man, the Hausers are tougher than I thought. Like,
they
Those dudes,
they got an MF-er in them.
Yes, they do. And it's and weird.
That's a compliment.
Yes. They're very much a, like, this is going to sound weird, but I feel like the way that they play just makes it seem like they would have been a better fit at Wisconsin. You know what I mean? Like, they have that kind of.
Oh,
like,
I disagree. They're too tough. I'm not saying Wisconsin guys aren't tough, but the Hausers got a little
they got some swag to them, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was gonna say they got a little like that trashiness swag to them that doesn't fit at Wisconsin.
You're right. Wisconsin does have a lot of nerds.
Yeah, they look at Brust.
Yes, and look at Ethan Happ. Loved this. This is a tangent, but I loved the shit that he was talking.
Oh,
win at Minnesota, but it
was laugh out loud funny.
Yes, and it was also super nerdy too. It's just kind of perfect Ethan Happ.
Like him blowing kisses, and then I went back and I put in other guys talking shit to student sections, and you had Marshall Henderson, you had Nick Stauskas, who did it way cooler, Niang, everyone just did it so much cooler. Happ, I was like, you're a robot who's malfunctioning.
Yeah, but I love it, man. I love me some Ethan Happ.
So great.
All right, so let's say the line opens up at Marquette minus -2, which is what I'm expecting. Are you all over Marquette?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I'm all over Marquette, too. I feel like that one, you know what? I got a buddy. His name is Rizzo. He is a degenerate just like us. And whenever there's lines that come out like this, and I text him about it, he sends me that that SpongeBob gif with the crab. It's like, it's a trap.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like this is one of those games where I'm going to tell him to bet Marquette and he's going to send me that GIF. So I don't know.
But it's also one where it's like, I just trust what I know about the game.
But I'll tell you what, the last three times that he said that to me, they were...
It's been true.
Yeah, it's like we've won the bet. So I think that I need to start fading Rizzo's traps. All right, rematch, Wisconsin at Michigan. The lines are... They're all kind of opened up, like with the total right around, right under 120, and Michigan favored by like 6 points. And that kind of seems about right to me. It makes sense.
Yeah. Because, listen, they lost at Wisconsin. That was a game where we were all waiting for Michigan to lose, right? Like, they had not looked, I mean, I'm not going to say they looked bad, but they hadn't looked like they had come back to win a couple of games. They had struggled a little bit.
They were due for an L.
They were due for a loss, and it was Wisconsin's game that they had to win, right? Because Wisconsin at that time was kind of on the other side where, hey, how good is this Wisconsin team? Like, yeah, Ken Pom says they're good, but at the same time, like, they're losing, like, to Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
I think Michigan kicks Wisconsin's ass.
I don't know if they kick their ass, just because I don't think that, like, look, these are two teams that are like two of the top seven teams in the country defensively. They are two of the slowest teams in college basketball. Neither of them go after offensive rebounds because they want to protect against fast breaks. So you know this is going to be like your typical Big Ten slugfest where both teams drain 20, 25 seconds off the shot clock before they do anything, where both teams just grind you down defensively, where you're not getting any easy fast break points unless like you have somebody jumping a passing lane. So the idea that like you would have to bet on Michigan to cover like 6 or 7 points in a game like that just seems like way too high for me. And I don't want to bet on Wisconsin because I think you're exactly right. The first matchup, we basically got the ceiling game for Ethan Happ.
Yeah.
Well, for Ethan Happ. And with Ethan Happ, offensively, like he basically does everything for them. And he had 26 points, 10 boards, 7 assists. It was one of the best offensive performances, considering opponent, that I think we've seen all season long. And at the same time, we had Iggy Brazdeikis was scoreless. He played awful. His worst game of the season.
He had a 0-0 rating on KenPom.
Yes, he had like easily his worst game of the season. Charles Matthews did not do anything offensively. And like that's not necessarily unexpected, but he's still a guy that gets you like, what, 14 points a game? And Jordan Poole kind of went off in the first half, but he also was a complete zero in the second half. So three of the best offensive weapons for Michigan basically gave you, well, two of them gave you their floor game, and Jordan Poole gave you his floor game for a half in the second half.
They also had 16 turnovers. I don't see that happening again, especially at home. Like Michigan is one of the best teams in the country taking care of the ball. Wisconsin, they're not really a team that forces. I mean, they don't force turnovers. So yeah, I think that 16 was an outlier, too.
Yeah, I like Michigan to win here. Six is a lot of points for me to take. What I do like...
I would say this feels like Ohio State, where it's going to be like a 15-point game.
Yeah.
I think Michigan's going to try to prove a point, especially because we have the... Like, I'm factoring everything here. You got the top 16 reveal. I guess that's going on before the game. The game's at noon or after the game. But I was thinking if Michigan ends up as like a 2 or 3 seed, like, hey, all right, we got to go prove a point here because this is where we stand. Revenge factor, home game. I feel like on the flip side now, Wisconsin's due for an L, right? Like they got a little bit of a winning streak here, but they've kind of pulled some games out. Like Nebraska game wasn't, you know, was close. Minnesota, they pulled out. Maryland, they were trailing, right, at halftime, or were they up at halftime on that one?
I don't remember. I just
they were trailing at halftime in that one. So it's almost like just the things are reversed, where I think Wisconsin's due for an L on the road against a similar team.
Well, I'll put it like this. If I do take the line, then I'm going to be betting the Michigan side. I don't know if I like that line as much as I like the under here, just because of what I said earlier with the way these two teams can defend, the way they don't want to run, the way that they kind of just drain the clock offensively, the fact that like you're not going to get a ton of turnovers that lead to easy baskets, you're not going to get a ton of transition opportunities, and you're not going to get, like, they don't go to the offensive glass. You're not going to get a lot of, you know, second chance opportunities, tip-ins, put-back dunks, fouls, and ones when, you know, Ethan Happ grabs a rebound right at the rim and leaves it back in. You're not going to get a ton of that. So if this line opens up at, like, or the total opens up in, like, the mid to high 120s, I'm all over that under.
Yeah, somebody's not getting to 55.
Yes, yes.
That's and the question is then, does it turn into a blowout where somebody wins by 20?
All right, let's move on real quick. Kentucky at Mississippi State. All three projections have this at Kentucky 72, Mississippi State 70, and yep. I absolutely love Kentucky minus two here. I do not think that it's going to open up Kentucky minus two because Kentucky never opens up at what you think it's going to be. I would expect this to be like five or six. I'd still be all over that line.
Yeah, I'm a little worried here as like a Kentucky grad and everything that exactly what we talked about with Michigan, Wisconsin, where Kentucky feels like they're due for an L. And Mississippi State has played them once already. And Mississippi State just wants to muck up the game, which is okay for Kentucky because they can kind of do the same thing, right? Where, hey, we'll play ugly with you. Like, we'll just pound it inside to PJ Washington, who I think PJ Washington is a second or third team, probably third team All-American right now.
He has definitely, if we're only going off of like the last 3 weeks, he's been a first team All-American the last 3 weeks. He was not good for long stretches at the start of the year, but he has been unbelievable the last, I've talked about this on previous podcasts, so I don't need to reiterate it, but their last 3 weeks, like this winning streak, the fact that Kentucky has become what they've become, it's not a coincidence that it happens to coincide with PJ Washington like hitting his ceiling as a college basketball player.
Nope. So that's, if it opens up at six, I'm probably going to take Mississippi State. Two, I'm a little nervous. Just because this is Mississippi State's like must-win game, right? They're coming off the blown lead against LSU. They can ugly it up enough to where I think make Kentucky uncomfortable. The one thing that Kentucky has done is go down early in SEC games. Then they go on a run and then pull away in the second half. That's kind of been their MO. On the road, at a place that they don't typically play great at over, you know, recent history is Mississippi State. I don't know. I kind of like Mississippi State here.
Yeah, the one thing I will say to your point is that next week they have LSU at home and Tennessee at home. Yep. So there might be a little bit of a look ahead factor here. It's just, you know, I honestly think it comes down to you need to decide what you think about PJ Washington versus Reggie Perry, because that is really in the first game. PJ had 21 and 6. He hit three threes. Reggie Perry fouled out. Eric Holman fouled out. They could not deal with his stretchability. Like, he can step out and play on the perimeter a little bit, but he's also physical enough and long enough where he can hold his own in the paint. Now, Reggie Perry in the last three games is averaging 19.3 points, 9.3 boards. He's a McDonald's All-American. He is a guy. Somebody I know connected in Georgia told me he was the single most underrated prospect in the class of 2018. And I think we're seeing that kind of come to fruition a little bit. And if he can end up winning that battle with PJ Washington, that kind of takes away a little bit of the advantage that Mississippi State has. The way that I kind of see this playing out is Quindary Weatherspoon is going to get his. You know, the Keldon Johnson, Tyler Hero, Jamal Baker, those guys are not going to make it easy for him, but he's going to get his. Ashton Hagans is going to make life a nightmare for Nick Weatherspoon or Lamar Peters or Tyson Carter or whoever he is guarding in the backcourt. He's going to make it a nightmare for him. I think that you are going to end up seeing Mississippi State go away from playing. I forget what the seven-footer center that they have, what his name is, but we're going to see a lot of Reggie Perry and Eric Holman lineups. Oh,
Addo.
Yeah, and so it comes down to, do you think that Mississippi State front line is going to be able to outplay Kentucky? And I just don't think, I can't bet on that. If we're talking about like getting to seven or eight, maybe then I just won't bet on Kentucky. But if it's Kentucky minus two, I just don't see any way that I can, Mississippi State has lost three of their last five of their last nine, and I never thought that they were actually really all that good. So if you're going to tell me that it's Kentucky minus two against a team like that with the way that Kentucky's playing, I'm all over it.
Yeah, the one thing I think you're going to see Mississippi State just completely sag into the lane and try to challenge at the rim because they can bother a guy like Reed Travis at the rim. You know, try to force Washington into more of a jump shooter than his ability to, you know, kind of take a dribble and get into the lane like he's been doing, you know, a great job of recently. So, to me, it's just how much am I going to trust Kentucky shooting on the road against a team that wants to ugly the game up? And again, maybe it's just the fact that I went to Kentucky and I've seen them play in Starkville and seen this like story happen so many times where I might like Kentucky, but if it's 6, 7, 8, I like Mississippi State.
Fair enough. Louisville at Florida State. It is the projections actually have it's all like within 1 point. Two of them, KenPom and Torvik, have Florida State winning by one. Haslam has Louisville winning by one on the road at Florida State. I think I like the Seminoles here, and I think I like them a lot simply because the way that they just kind of match up. You know, yep. Louisville's two most important players, Jordan Wara and Dwayne Sutton, are like exactly what you look at Florida State, just kind of like athletic wings. Really versatile.
Terrence Mann, MJ Walker, those type of guys.
Yeah, Phil Kofer, all those guys are going to be able to match up with Wara and Dwayne Sutton. And I just see them winning that matchup.
Yeah, I agree. I like Florida State here too. I think this is the perfect game of similar teams, and whoever's at home, you take blindly.
Yep. The only thing that I'll say is that Florida State does not match up well with teams that play the pack line. And Chris Mack plays pack line because, basically, like, long story short, the pack line forces you to shoot jump shots, doesn't let you get to the offensive glass, and kind of makes you not play in transition. And Florida State, like, as good as Capengele and Terrence Mann have been, they are a team that does kind of rely on they're not a great half court executing team. They're not a great jump shooting team, and they don't really have great point guard play. So they kind of need people getting to the rim. They need transition, and they need offensive rebounds, which is what Louisville does kind of take away in the pack line. And like the perfect example of this, I'm not saying that Louisville's as good as Virginia, and this game was played on the road versus at home for Florida State, but they got absolutely humiliated against Virginia, who like plays the pack line better than anybody. They were down 65-36 with 2 minutes left in that game. The one thing I will say, one other thing though, that we need to note, Florida State at home has only lost once this season, and that was the buzzer beater against Duke and Cam Reddish. So they're a really tough team in Tallahassee.
And I'm just glad we get to actually see Florida State play, because I swear they're on ACC Network every week.
Yes, they are. Like, there's so many times
it's impossible to watch them.
I got to go back and like watch them on Synergy the next day, and you get halfway through, and I'm just like, this is not, you know, that. Look, I don't mean to piss off Florida State fans, but you do not have the most aesthetically pleasing basketball team.
Let's put
it like that. Yeah.
So I agree. Like, I am worried about Florida State shooting, but I think the fact that it is at home and the fact that they just match up so well with Louisville defensively, where, yes, Louisville takes care of the ball, Florida State forces turnovers, I think Florida State wins that battle, which ultimately wins the game. And we're talking about a one maybe 2 point game here.
Yeah. And if the lines end up being anything close to what the projections are, I'd bet the home team. Bet the home team in this one.
Exactly. Especially when they're similar teams.
All right, Riggs, listen, man, I appreciate the time. Hopefully we will be getting rich this weekend, and you guys will be getting rich right along with us. Riggs, I'll catch up with you, buddy. Thanks, man.
All right, see you, man.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.